All right. Welcome to another episode of Autodesk Digital Builder Podcast. I am your host, Eric Thomas. We are once again in One Market here in San Francisco, one of Autodesk's corporate offices. I have the pleasure of sitting down with Alan Dillon, the senior superintendent with Trubeck Construction, a company I actually had the privilege of working for before I stepped into working at PlanGrid and later Autodesk. So, Alan, it's a real pleasure having you here. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, we're going to have a fun conversation. And when we last spoke, like we ranged from some technology, all kinds of different topics, but something that I could tell you were passionate about was mentorship. And so a big part of the conversation today is going to key on that topic specifically. So thank you for sharing a little bit about your experience and passion for that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
So starting off on your experience working with and leading others in construction, what would you say are the biggest milestones of your career or some of the moments that really made a big impact in how your career unfolded?
I've worked in construction since high school in the Bay Area the whole time, and just the opportunities to work inside the Bay Area, which in my mind is the kind of the think tank of the world. So great opportunities, built a lot of great things. And like I said, I started as an apprentice carpenter right out of high school and committed to the first 4 years, and here I still am 42 years later. So just a great career building all kinds of different things, great things.
And you've had a really interesting role with early technology too. So I mentioned PlanGrid a moment ago, and I was hoping you could talk a little bit about your experience working with that organization as our old CEO before Autodesk acquired the company, you know, kind of got that company off the ground.
Yeah, so a great opportunity to work with Tracy at the time. We were working for Rudolph and Sutton, both of us at Vacaville Kaiser, and Tracy was an intern with us. And the drawings were bigger than Tracy, I think. So I think from there, we kind of came up with a plan, or the four of them came up with a plan to say, hey, how can we try to go paperless as the industry? That was kind of a buzzword that was out there in the industry. And as technology was starting to come about and evolve, I think one of the things that PlanGrid folks came up with was, how can we start using an iPad? And then from there, I mean, it has just exploded into all the things that PlanGrid and all the other products that are out there have come up with.
It's really kind of a crazy moment, because when I joined construction too, it was before PlanGrid, it was before a lot of these digital technologies, and the capabilities just weren't there with the hardware. And so when you looked at, you know, the construction industry, we have very specific workflows. There's very specific expectations that ended up being tied to paper. And that was that first moment where we go, okay, like you can actually put the plans on this. Let's figure out how to do this. And it shook up the industry. There was a big change and some hesitancy, but it's been rewarding to see the enthusiasm that digital technology has shown up on the job site. And now, as you were alluding to a moment ago, it's changed. Like there's a lot out there. There's a lot of tools, both on the hardware and the software side, that just make us a more productive and safe and successful industry than we were 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole construction industry is based upon do it once and do it right, do it efficient, and that's how we make money. So yeah, to see all of the technology take place is really pretty great.
You alluded a moment ago to over 40 years in construction, which is incredibly impressive. What are the biggest changes that you've seen in your time working on site? What's just from day one to today is just absolutely categorically different?
Well, technology would be the first one of those. I was thinking, as you were just describing PlanGrid, I remember going to a World of Concrete convention. I think it was around the year 2000, 1999, 2000. And that's when BIM was just getting started. And to walk around that convention center and see BIM that started off with the simple things, just like rebar in a form, and then how they were going to model conduit or how the rebar was going to fit, and still have all the clearances. I mean, it was from that, and it moved on to PlanGrid, and now it's just so many different places that technology has gone. So that's one big thing. I think prefab is another one that's really trying to make its mark. Probably here's where I would say, hey, 40 years in the business, I'm sure there's a whole lot of improvements that can happen, and it is really in the industry, not so much in what I do in commercial work, but I do see where it has its place. And the other one is our tradesmen. Our tradesmen are more specialized. Now, as I came up through the ranks, started at the foundation and the anchor bolts, and you stayed and you did the Dorn hardware and all the interior, exterior finishes. Now, I think the industry through the tradesmen, it's a lot more specialized. We bring in our concrete guys and they move on to the next concrete job. And we bring in our finish guys and they come in and they do the finish work. And I think that's covering across all trades, a lot of prefab and then a lot of specialists. So, I mean, I know it's a good thing from efficiencies, but just in my thinking, I prefer the guy that can start at the beginning and go to the end. So
it's an interesting pivot. And I think it has parallels to other industries, especially at the scale and size of the company that you're talking about. If I look at some of the smaller technology companies I worked at between construction companies, the smaller ones, people were more the jack of all trades. You'd sit down, and if I think in my marketing lens, you were doing email marketing, you're doing content marketing and everything else. And as those organizations scale, that starts to change a bit because the generalist needs to start narrowing the focus so you can be more efficient. So I see both. I agree the balance between that is an interesting one because the conversation you have with somebody who gets every stage of the project is probably a bit different than the gentleman who is more focused on concrete specifically, even if the finish work that he's doing now might be a little bit better than it would have been otherwise.
Right.
And yeah. The technology, as you alluded to, I think that's commonplace. And the prefab part too, I talk about that pretty frequently. The perception of this outdated, boring, gray box that you just stand up and go, here's your prefab thing, that's changing now. And it's not just your casework. It's not just smaller elements you're prefabricating. So I think as the technology iterates, as you kind of alluded to, there's a lot of impressive things that are coming. On the other hand, what hasn't changed? What is the same from where you're starting to where you step on a project site today that is going to look like it did no matter what year you're walking around on the site?
Where we haven't changed is concrete. You still got to pour concrete. Every truck shows up, it's either going to get tailgated or it's going to get pumped. And that's just man labor that's going to do that. And that's probably the simple one. We're still going to stand buildings, you know, one piece of steel pretty much at a time. And so no matter how much you try to prefab or have technology, make sure that all the BIM modeling is working, at the end of the day, it's still a tradesperson's hands that are going to touch it and assemble the buildings and bring it all together and bring it into finish. And that's really what I like about, I just love that about construction.
And it's such an interesting moment right now as that technology piece and the fact that we're builders, we're building every day, kind of marry because it's how are those complementary? And it's not how am I replacing this thing? How do we augment people? How do we fill the gaps with shortages of talent or resources or whatever? And as the technology has gotten better, we get to have impactful conversations and make meaningful improvements with the way we build. But also at the end of the day, people still have to go out and be on site, but there's a bit more flexibility, I think, into how the approach is executed than even where we were at 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think you just talked about shortages. So, you know, as we're coming out of the pandemic, you can just watch the style of construction buildings. Everything's going vertical now in the Bay Area. So that's one thing. But if there was a steel shortage, then all we did was we shifted over to concrete. And then the glazing systems are just evolving, evolving, evolving. So the types of buildings that we're building are just completely changing all the time. I mean, when I first got into construction, tilt-ups were the biggest thing out there and some wood frame was happening. And now it's moved on to, like I said, everything is vertical, a lot more post-tension concrete. Right now there's a lot of cast-in-place concrete. So just able to evolve and keep moving forward.
Yeah, the flexibility and innovative approach, especially as we try to fill some of those gaps that we're seeing where there's something isn't available or the lead time is just absurd based on the schedule that you like to keep a hold of. I've heard mass timber is coming up a lot more frequently now too, and there's a sustainability element of that that differs from the concrete perspective, but it's great to have options, I guess, as far as how we start iterating and building on that. And so trending towards the mentorship piece of the conversation, if you could go back and give yourself one piece of advice when you were younger, what do you think that would be if you look retrospectively on your career?
Well, I think I've had a great career, and I think I've been just given a lot of opportunities, and just a lot of folks have given me a lot of opportunities. So to go back to the beginning and say, hey, you know, what would I do differently? I'm not sure I could go back, and just based upon the building that I've been able to do, the opportunities that people have given me, the types of construction I've done. I mean, other than to say a specific building I wished I didn't have undone.
I think we all know that game.
Right. So, but as far as a career, I just really love construction, and it's been a great career for me, and it's still a great career to get into.
That's why I really like the fact that I still get to support construction, even if I'm not out working on proposals myself or doing as many site walks as I might have done in years past, is just the passion for people who really, truly love and breathe and care about this industry. It's contagious. And get to walk around, and I'm sure you could walk around downtown San Francisco and have that kind of narrative of, well, I helped work on that project at this, and that building was here, and we did these things. And it's a privilege to hear those stories and listen to people talk about the history they've had, because there's a deep relationship with the community that they live in at that point. It's a very different conversation. So as we kind of spin into mentorship specifically, in supporting everybody that you work with, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your approach to mentorship. And I know it's a passion of yours. And so how do you think about that as a big part of the work that you do and how you build your team and your community?
I'm really big on teamwork. It is my job to lead the way, but because I've been given so many opportunities, I just really think that surrounding myself with a good team and giving them opportunities and trying to mentor them along the way is just huge. It's my turn to pay forward in my mind, and to just see the next generation come in and how the next generation needs to understand what I might be explaining, which is more old construction. Let's go out there and get it done, and how technology fills into that. I could see the next generation kind of struggles with that as well. But I'm just real big on teamwork, give everybody a lot of opportunity, and just stick with them and don't let them quit. And at the end of the day, when the job is a success, you know, just really just proud of the people that I work with and, you know, the team that I've had.
It's such a important mindset to have as far as what you're alluding to, because if you're a manager and you have in the back of your head, like, I'm a dictator of this project or something, that doesn't lift up your people. But you get to step back, and it's been one of the more rewarding things that I've had a chance to do in my career, is I step into a leadership position and say, how can I help you? What is blocking your success right now so I can get it out of your way so you can, you know, step into that next level of your career and start growing? But one of the bigger things that you just mentioned that I think is so important right now is, how do we take the knowledge that you have right now and how do we pair that with the knowledge that some of the younger generations have with technology? Because those have to be married, because it's the future of how we're going to be building. But the other part of it, and it's a little bit of a scary one as we think about the labor shortage, is how do we retain the knowledge that you have as you move towards retirement and a lot of other people in this industry start stepping towards, you know, handing the torch off to the next generation, to keep that knowledge of how to build and not just focus on the technology piece too, because you can't have one or the other. You have to have both at this point to stay competitive and continue building within the expectations of all the owners and the different projects and the ecosystems we support.
Well, so over the last 10 years, when I was at DPR Construction, I would get teams that would come out and work with me, and I'd like to give those teams, you know, each one of those guys, you know, they have their scope, and have them understand the schedule, the logistics. And so for me, I'm big on schedules and I'm big on logistics. And I'm big on that at the very beginning when I'm buying the job. And I try to just stay with that all the way through. It's just tells us how we're going to get to the finish line, our schedules do. And logistics is what's the flow of the job. So I try to explain that to all my team members, including my engineers, to say, hey, here's what we're going to do. As you're talking to our subcontractors, just go through the schedule. It tells us when we're going to pour concrete. It tells us when we're going to hang iron. It's telling the glazer when he needs to be on site and casework and so on. Keep planting that into their minds. As I would say to my young engineers when I come in, every day I would say, have you talked to all your subs today? And that doesn't mean just put an email out. That means get them on the phone and have you talked to them? Have you read our schedule? Are you looking months and months ahead? And by doing that, it just sinks in. The repetition of me saying every day, you know, first thing I would say, 7 o'clock in the morning, have you started talking to your subs today? Same goes for my field guys. Hey, how many guys you got on the job? You know, are they where we need them to be? Are they, we all following the schedule? So again, when I was at DPR for 10 years, I would get folks that would work with me for 2 to 3 years on a project. And then at the end of that project, discussing with the office, you know, where everybody was going to go, I would actually ask for those folks to go off of my job. And it wasn't because they failed. It was because I felt like, hey, they'd had 2 or 3 years of working with me, and now they have the Allen style, but they need to go out and experience other ways that other superintendents are going to do business. And with all of that, just like me when I was coming up, you pick and you choose what does and doesn't work for you. And I think you just hone your skills. And so I still get guys that worked with me a couple, 3 years ago that will call me up and just kind of sanity check, you know, and I just enjoy that kind of relationship that, you know, it's not just a work relationship, you know, it's a friendship.
It is. And construction is a relationships business. I can think of very few industries where you could have a project where 15, 20, 30 different companies will all be converged in one spot and working in tandem and coordinating together. And if you don't have good relationships in that environment, it's going to be very difficult to stay on schedule and stay on track and continue that momentum forward. But I really liked how you highlighted the exiting people off of your projects and not that it's a failure point, and it's been valuable. I can think of a number of times in my career where I've had a leader or a mentor leave the business I was working for or move to a different part of the company. And in the moment, it was a little bit scary. You go, oh my gosh, like this person who I trust and I built this relationship is leaving, not because of me, but I'm still concerned. But exactly what you said, as far as this is a chance to learn something, has happened every time that that has gone down. And so you lose some culture, there's some changes that happen, but you get to see that new approach and you might get supported in a new way, or you might get pushed in a new direction where you hadn't been pushed before, because maybe that's not where your focus was, but this other person is. And that's huge.
Well, and so it's great for the folks that I'm moving on. So they learn the different styles and hopefully different types of construction. It's also, in my mind, you know, I've had people that understood the way I did business on my job and, you know, surround yourself with good people. And that's what I have always done. I've been very lucky that way. Now, as I move those folks on, well, now here comes some new people that now I'm going to restart mentoring. So now all of a sudden my job where, you know, I might have been in a comfort zone, now I'm not in a comfort zone anymore because, you know, I'm right back to like a 50% apprentice. I got to relearn the new team that's around me.
Yeah. And you learn from those people as well. So that's not a one-sided relationship also. You get to bring new people in, whether they're younger or older, been experienced or not, in different perspectives, different personalities have value. Even if the, like you said, the first part, you're like, okay, how do we bring these people together? How do we figure it out? But you do. And everybody takes something away from that. I think there's a lot of value.
Right.
What was the most impactful mentor that you've had in your career? Like who, if you're looking retrospectively, said something or did something or had an approach that really resonated and has resulted in the, you know, the gentleman sitting in front of me right now?
So that would have been a senior superintendent at Rudolph and Sutton. His name is Larry Lascarene. He gave me a lot of opportunity, learned a lot from him. As I talk about schedule and logistics, it was just amazing the schedules that he had put together. And now I understand how valuable those schedules are. And what's interesting about a project schedule is you have to put in enough information so everybody understands the direction we're going to go and what that activity includes. But you also don't want to put in so much information that if you need to shift the job and move it in another direction, you have the ability to do so. So it's a real fine line. And Larry taught me how to do that and what that meant. And the same goes for logistics. As a foreman, he knew every nail we were going to drive. And so it just really taught me to get out in front of my team and understand how the job's going to go.
I chuckled a little bit when you're talking about the schedule too, because it just made me think of when I was doing federal proposals specifically, and I had a very firm page count as far as what we could put into a contract.
Yeah.
And getting this Z Fold 11x17 schedule that was this thick in a 11x17, a massive binder. It's like, we can't include that. So I only have 2 pages for my technical narrative now. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head on that balance of the right amount of detail versus not including enough. And I don't think that only applies to the schedule. That's kind of across the board as far as what you're working on too, and finding that sweet spot.
Yeah. Well, and that's one more thing that Larry had, you know, really shared with me and taught me was, as a superintendent, I am a builder, but I try to run my job like a business, right? So my job needs to make money. So as the superintendent, I'm kind of the CEO of the project, along with project manager being my team member, who would be kind of the CFO. So I just really think that having those opportunities as I was coming up and being taught that our construction site, it's its own business inside our overall Trubeck company.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said in that. And if you think about all of your experience over the years, if somebody's just getting into the industry, you're thinking about the industry, what advice would you give them as they just start their career in construction? Like, where should they be focusing as they really get into the mix of things?
Well, construction is very, very much a driven, it's very labor intense. So if, as you're going to get into this industry, and if, you know, as you decide what levels, as I would talk to project engineers and, you know, where they see themselves going, I've been able to work with a lot of PEs that are corporate executives of the construction companies they work for. Even Tracy would be one at a kind of a different angle. I think, you know, the time intensity is one piece of it. I think being driven and not quitting, and take that step to listen to what mentors around you and understand that, you know, your fellow PEs that are kind of in the same age or the same area of their career, you know, we all have something. So like even our project engineers that I'll work from job to job to job, I'll try to move up what their scopes are, right? So they become well-rounded. And that's, I'm probably saying it silly, but to have the engineers be able to communicate with each other is really helpful for them to keep moving and advancing in their careers as well.
And I'm sure there's a bit of a safety in being able to look adjacent to yourself. And if you've got a question or you want to sanity check something too, or you go, like, I think Alan said this. Right. Does this make sense? You know, but the other part of it too, I think, is always being comfortable asking questions and being curious about what you're doing too. So for me personally, if I look back, especially with the first general contractor I worked on or worked for, I started asking a lot of questions about a specific aspect of our business because I thought the logistics and the dynamics of those proposals that were being put together was just very interesting. There's big security stuff when we're working in the Middle East and everything. I was like, this is just neat. I want to know more about it. And as I kind of worked through that, the proposal managers, the senior ones that were doing that, were, this guy's paying attention to this. Let's bring him in on this one because it's a big effort. And that ultimately resulted in two things. Well, a few more than that, likely, but a few things. One, I ended up transferring and living in Dubai for a couple of years for Gilbane Federal at that time because of all those questions I asked and the skill set that I built up as I started getting into those proposals. But the other part of it is I built some friendships in those moments with a couple of gentlemen who are, I would say, about your age, give or take a few years. And they're some of my best friends in the entire world. And I have not worked for them or worked with them for a decade or longer. And every time I'm back in the Bay Area, like I am right now, I have dinner with them. They were instrumental to me having that opportunity. And that opportunity defined the trajectory of the rest of my life, to be honest. If I hadn't worked in Dubai and I hadn't had those opportunities and made those relationships, I don't think we'd be having this conversation right now, if I'm being completely honest with you.
Yeah.
And so the value of finding those mentors and building those relationships, there's a business part of that. There's a career part of it too. But I think there's bigger nuance to it that just impacts who you end up becoming as a person. And that's hard to qualify sometimes, but it's really big.
Yeah. I only know construction. So as I said, when I got into it, given an opportunity, my one commitment that I had to make was I would stay in my apprenticeship for 4 years and then I could go do whatever I wanted to do out of my commitment. But as time has gone on, I've just found where construction just kind of gets into me. And I find that over all these years that construction just becomes part of us. It's not a, I mean, it's not really a job. You punch in at 7 and you go home at 3:30. It's just kind of always there. I mean, heck, if I sit in the dentist office and I'm waiting to be called in, I'm looking up at the ceiling and I'm, you know, looking at where the sprinkler heads are at or where the diffusers are at, right? I'm just kind of punch listing the building, right? So, I mean, even when I've gone to Europe and walking around on vacation, you know, my wife would give me a bad time because, you know, I'm paying attention to the construction that I'm walking past. You know, it's like, oh, I wouldn't be doing it that way. I wonder why they're doing it that way. And so I just think construction just really gets into your skin and you just can't turn it off.
Yeah. I mean, here I am because I work for a couple contractors. I stepped off and I was working in healthcare technology for a while. And then surprise, you know, here we are having this conversation again. And the experience I had at that other company in a different industry had value to my career. And it helped me understand the technology side of things in a way I wouldn't have if I had went from GC to GC to GC. But I did end up dipping back into here and I love having these conversations and there's just so much neat stuff. And candidly, I trend towards the technology piece just because I think it's neat. I love talking about the drones and like, where is our laser scanning at today?
Oh, yeah.
How is all of this coming together? But you can use those conversations to start bringing in other talent and other staff too, because some of those nuances are what get younger people really excited. And I think it can help fight the perception challenges construction can have sometimes that we could step into and build out and fill out those labor holes that we have where we don't have the talent. You go, hey, like, it's not just pounding nails. It's not just pouring concrete. It's a big part of it. But also there's a technology piece to this and a relationships piece that builds out the whole ecosystem of what, you know, you get to do every day. It's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to think about just your experience as a superintendent. And I think this is a fun question because it'll kind of dial back into your leadership approach as well. What would you say separates a good superintendent from a great superintendent? Like what are the qualities or characteristics or approaches, I guess?
I think the good superintendent to a great superintendent, it's dedication, a lot of long hours, understanding the jobs. It's not really a job where you, again, punch in at 7, you go home at 3:30. I'm really schedule-driven and logistics-driven, and I'm lucky enough to get on a job, usually at the very beginning when the job's being bought or even before that when we're proposing. So I get that first look, and kind of in today's construction world, a lot of times we'll go into a presentation or proposal, and there are no drawings. And so as a superintendent, I'm putting in my mind, okay, what's it going to take to get me to the finish line based upon what that narrative is going to be? And, you know, you might see some timelines and some types of construction and square footages and general purpose of the project that we're going to build. But that's how soon I start thinking about how I'm going to build the project. So I not just explain it to that owner, that developer, but I'm also able to explain it to my subcontractors so that we can get great pricing and good pricing and good solid understanding of how the work's going to go. So I think for me to be I don't want to say a great superintendent, but where my success has been is just what I'm explaining is I see the job at the very beginning and I see it all the way to the end. And I know where my float is in the schedule. I know where I can shift the job's shoulders, where I can buy some more time. And I know and understand where our critical paths are.
In that schedule conversation, I think has continued to become more important in the last, you know, 5, 10, 15 years because the expectations on schedule durations just continue to narrow.
Oh, yeah.
And if you've got that ambiguity, like you said, you come in and you might not have drawings or you might have 80% done drawings or something, to be able to find that gray area to qualify to your subs, it's huge because now they're not padding with contingency because they're uncertain. If you can give them that confidence, that's a two-way street. And I just remember you're comparing bids and it's never an apples to apples comparison, right? Obviously. And so trying to figure out where those gaps and deltas are and you go, why is this guy's number 70K and this guy's number is a 240K? What's going on? You know,
right.
To have that mentality to ask the right questions and right. Try to get that parity and everybody feels a lot better about the numbers. And there's less surprises too, because it doesn't feel good when you bid, you get your, you know, we bid 20 million on this and then the sub goes and they come back 2 weeks later and go, we missed the scope in this number. And then everybody goes, all right, let's see how we can make that up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I have one more recurring question that I ask every guest here, and it's a fun one because it really shows where your focus is when you're building, especially within the construction industry. So what is one tool that you'll always bring to any project, no matter what you're working on?
Well, so Eric, you're probably starting to get the kind of a theme that, you know, that I'm going to say. It's I always bring a schedule with me. I always bring logistics with me. And it just allows me to describe and explain and to my own team, but also my subcontractors on how we're going to walk through that project, how we're going to get to the finish line successfully. It's very easy to explain that to the owner as well. And so every job I go to, we were talking earlier and you said a tape measure. Well, yeah. But for me, it's a schedule and it's logistics and just having the plan of attack and getting everybody to buy into your plan of attack. So if I speak to it very confidently and I understand, you know, how we need to move through the job, it's a lot easier to get my team and my subcontractors to buy into that.
It makes sense. And in technology now, as I come back to that again, I think makes it easier to have that information accessible regardless of where we're going now. I mean, could you imagine 15 years ago being able to walk into an owner's meeting and somebody asked a question about some document that you don't have to be able to just quickly go, hold on one second. You know, you pull out your iPad or your iPhone or whatever, and you're, hold on, let me pull this up. And then boom, here's the most accurate, up-to-date information, even though I didn't know you were going to request that document today.
Yeah, exactly.
It's huge.
Oh yeah. That is just crazy. But that goes back to the iPad and a plan grid. You know, it's my guys out in the field got to understand how to use plan grid way better than I did. But when they started using it, you know, it all started for a set of plans. But then all of a sudden it had the feathering in of current drawings and updating it through design changes, RFIs, the specs where it could be in it, the contract could be in it, right? So when you're talking to a subcontractor and you're arguing over something, one of my guys can just go, well, let me check. And up he pulls it on his iPad and says, well, here's what your contract says. So that amount of information to just be at a snap of a finger is just, you know, it's just crazy.
That's huge. And I won't nerd out too badly here, but that's when you start talking, you know, common data environment and the way you share all these tools and trackable and accountability. You're not finishing a project and going, hello, my favorite owner, here's a mountain of CDs and a bunch right. of binders with maybe not parity on the documentation you have, but here's everything, you know, and now you got to page through it. It's a different experience, both when you're building, but at the end too. And I could go way down the rabbit hole and talk about, you know, digital twins and the way the owners are operating the buildings is starting to change now.
Yeah.
And the contractors, especially the ones who are future focused and have a good relationship with their owners, are the ones that are enabling that to actually happen, because you don't get to decide you want a digital twin. Well, you could, but you're going to struggle if you're 80% done with the project and you go, okay, we'd like a living, breathing digital twin of our project. Can you put that together for us, as you've been based on paper for the last 4 years?
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
Right.
So yeah. Is there anything that you're working on right now or excited or you think people out there would be interested to hear about that you'd like to plug today?
Well, my current project is a hospital. It's an existing hospital campus. It's at San Mateo County Health. And what's going to be really interesting and intriguing and very careful is we have an existing building that stays and we have a cast-in-place building that needs to be demoed off of an existing hospital building. And usually, you know, the hospital's going to stay occupied. It needs to stay up and running. And so just how the chess game or the puzzle is going to work to be able to peel the old building off of the existing building that stays and then build a new building and, you know, right in place of it in a new footprint. It's exciting for me to be able to try to put that puzzle together and think it through and see it come to light. And that's kind of just the way my whole career has been, is not just a remodel, but even new construction. You know, just the beauty of construction for me is we have progress happen every single day. And when you drive off of that job site, you can look over your shoulder in your rearview mirror and you see, you know, your fruits of your labor for that day's work. And it's just the coolest thing to just drive away and see, you know, fresh building of whatever it is. And I've had the luxury of building a lot of great stuff. You know, it's just neat to build a hospital and know that you have an opportunity. What structure you put in place maybe saves lives, or in technology, whether it be biotech or just technology to know that in the Bay Area, you know, here we are bettering life in some fashion. You know, it's just been a great career.
There's a lot of nuance to that. And is your hospital example has always been an interesting one. And I've touched a lot of those proposals. And for those out listening who might not be familiar, there's so much nuance in building adjacent to active hospital sites because you can't have pollutants making their way in there. You can't have dust coming into the facility. Yeah. And so the nuanced protocols that you have to put in place are an entirely different level than a new demo. And it's like you said, it's a puzzle. It's how do you do this and execute it in a way that's not disruptive to the hospital that's running, but also at the same time is not creating an unintentional safety and health hazard. So that's fun. It reminds me of some of the federal contracts we were talking about working on active flight lines where if you're going to cross a runway or something, the protocols that happen before you're going to do that are onerous because if you drop a bolt or a screw and you drive away,
oh yeah,
nobody's having a good day. We'll just leave it at that.
yeah. That is true. I worked out at Moffett Airfield and we were on the air guard side of the field and that was, you know, live airfield, federal airfield. And the term was FOD that you just described, foreign object debris.
It's been a few years since I've touched those proposals.
And it really was, you know, trying to get that driven into every tradesperson's mind that, you know, that screw that fell out of your nail bag, you know, could mean something if it gets, you know, sucked up into a jet engine. So, yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of nuance there. But Alan, again, just thank you so much for taking your time today to sit down and have this conversation with
me. Thank you, Eric.
It's been a bunch of fun.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And for everybody that's out there listening right now, thanks for taking the time to join us on another episode of Autodesk Digital Builder Podcast. If you've got any questions for me or want to suggest a future episode, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn or find me on Twitter at builder_digital. All of our shows now are moving into video, so you can also find us on YouTube if you've been listening on Spotify or Apple or wherever you happen to get your podcasts. And of course, if you enjoy the show, if you could take a minute to rate us on whatever player that you're listening on, it does us a big favor and, you know, helps us out at the back end. So thank you so much. And on that final note, goodbye.